Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, and I am your host, Tom Rafferty. Hey everyone, welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Rafferty with SAP, and my special guest on the show today is JD. JD, would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you, Tom. First of all, thank you for having me on your podcast. I really appreciate this opportunity. My name is Johannes Drooghaag, but it's shortened to JD because that's much easier and it doesn't hurt so much to pronounce. I started my career in industrial automation, the classical way, putting a lot of robots and a lot of sensors and a lot of PLCs in a factory. And through time, I learned that there are other options and that we can do a lot more with the data we are collecting and turn that into information, or what I prefer, actionable information. After some 25 years career in corporate roles, I decided to start my own consulting company, and I'm focusing on those two fields. On the one hand, the organizational side, the human being that is working with the information, and on the other side, the technology that is creating the data out of which we can create that actionable information. 30 years on the road now, and I keep learning every day, and that's one of the reasons why I'm with you today, Tom, to keep learning from you as well.
Oh dear, no pressure on me, so.
No.
Okay, so I typically start the show asking the guests on the show to give me their personal definition of what a digital supply chain is, because, you know, everyone has a kind of a slightly different approach to it. It's a broad topic. So how do you define digital supply chain, JD?
Well, for me, the digital supply chain is basically the digital twin, so to speak, of the classical supply chain, which, as we all know it, with all the parts moving and the orders. The digital supply chain is the digital twin in which we can do two things. We can constantly respond to what is happening because we need to respond much faster than we used to do in the past. In the past, we had mass production, we had large batches, we had orders which were send out months before we start producing. Nowadays, we have much more dynamics. Orders are changed. We have smaller volumes. We have smaller production batches. We even want to avoid production batches. We want to create single piece flows in our factories. Mm-hmm. And the second thing we can do is we can start simulating in our digital supply chain. We can do real what if scenarios without actually having to touch the process. So we can start looking for opportunities and for optimization items. We can also look back to the past and see what failed, what didn't do what we were expecting that it would be doing, and how can we prevent that? What can we learn from that? And that, for me, is the digital supply chain. The information that we, on the one hand, get from the existing supply chains, which are much more complicated than they were in the past, and on the other hand, the learnings, the organizational handling of that digital supply chain.
Excellent. Very good. You started off saying that there were kind of two aspects to your looking at digital supply chain. One was the human side and the other was the actionable items. I've often said that in these kind of scenarios that the technology is generally very straightforward. It's getting people to change is the hard part. Is that your inkling as well, that, you know, technology is generally straightforward, people are hard?
Well, we can make the technology as complicated as we want, but that doesn't lead to anything, right? So if we start with a straightforward concept, and then make sure that the people who we expect to work with it also actually understand what we are expecting from them, which kind of responses we want, then we see that there is an enormous gap, because most people are already pretty much loaded with their actual work. And we need them to, first of all, have the mindset that when a system is telling them something, they should take it serious. And on the other hand, they need to understand what the difference is between some kind of generic status update and an urgent item that they actually need to respond to. Now, having three decades of experience, I have learned a couple of things. First of all, people do not really trust the system because there's always something which is not right. But if we take a closer look, that means we can learn and we can say, okay, we found something in the system which is not correct. Let's improve it. Yep. But the human behavior is to use that as an excuse almost to also ignore all the other things that they see in the system. And the second thing that I've learned is when you're busy going from A to B and somebody is telling you there's a smarter way you could go through C and then to B, you are focused on going to B, so you're not paying attention to that additional information. And that's an enormous challenge on top of the normal change management and organizational challenges we already have.
Yeah, indeed. And how do you overcome that?
Well, the first thing that I always do with my clients is start with the people and look at what their routines are and look at what kind of information they would need instead of the information that they have. Because what I see in my experience is that most service providers make the mistake of just adding more information to the already available information. And a production manager or a scheduler or a planner doesn't need a new report on top of all the reports. They need a report or an information overview that tells them what to do and where they should respond to. So I start by filtering. I start by asking them, if you have 20 reports and I take 10 away, which one would that be?
Yeah. And
the interesting thing is that most of the time, when I ask for 10, they give me 18 because they're not using
it. Yeah, there's a professor of journalism out of New York whose name is Clay Shirky, and he's got this great quote that I love. He says, there's no such thing as information overload. There's only filter failure.
Exactly. I love that.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. You talked as well, not just about the people aspect, but of the actionable items. What do you mean by that?
Well, an actionable item, I always take the example of the SCADA world, where I've spent 5 years all over the world. If you look at a SCADA system, you will always have a status screen where the operator can see the entire refinery or the entire pipeline or any other utilization of that SCADA. But as soon as the operator is expected to take action, that is automatically put in focus. So at the moment that the operator is expected to take action, the operator sees that action item. And that can be a small decision, that can be a big decision. But the system automatically focuses the attention of that operator on that particular item where an action is needed. Okay. Providers of SCADA system have learned over the years, and they have learned that if you keep that action item in the entire status screen of the refinery, operator won't notice it because it's just one little thingy sometimes they have up to 1,000 different aggregated devices in the overview. And an actionable item and an actionable piece of information means that first of all, the person who should take action is informed in the proper way without any kind of distractions. And secondly, the person has a couple of options or has supporting information to make that decision. Now, if I then compare it to what I see, especially in production facilities, that an operator is overloaded with a lot of status written information, which that person should not respond to. And hidden in that stream is that one item where the person should respond to. Well, then I cannot blame him for not seeing it or ignoring it or pressing the standard button so the pop-up goes away. Actionable information means to me, I see it when I need it. I get the information I need to take a decision. Or that actionable information informs me that something is not the way we wanted it to be. And I need to do some optimizing. Or it means I need to get some additional resources.
Right. A lot of that sounds like it's it's design-led issues potentially, or maybe not, maybe issues is the wrong word, but properly designed screens and user interfaces should do away with a lot of these issues.
Exactly. And then it's also a system thing, because if we look at a supply chain, then it's not just a screen on a machine. It is a whole stream of information. And if I have somewhere in my supply chain a change which was not part of the current planned activities, I cannot wait until that arrives at my facility. I need to respond to that with the appropriate lead time. And if that means a changeover in the production planning, and that means that I need to schedule some additional machine changeover, I need to know that in the appropriate time. So we also need to add some intelligence to it. We need to add which time frames we need. We need to add which kind of materials we need. And if we start figuring that out at the moment that it has already happened, well, we are too late, especially when our supply chain is a bit more complicated than the local grocery shop.
We'll be right back.
Elevate your brand with the Sustainable Supply Chain Podcast, the exclusive voice in supply chain sustainability. Last year, this podcast's episode were downloaded 113,000 times by senior executives across the world, with listeners concentrated in the EU, North America, and Asia. Become a sponsor. Lead the conversation. Contact me for sponsorship opportunities and turn downloads into dialogues. Act today. Influence the future.
Indeed, we have some customers with some very, very complex supply chains. So yeah, tying all those disparate pieces of data together can prove challenging.
Exactly. I always use this lovely example from my own automotive experience. If we look at the classical, at a car, we have up to 40,000 components. If we look at an electrical vehicle, your favorite topic, we still have about 10,000 components for just one car.
Yeah.
Now, if we make one change, just one change, we might have to reschedule a couple of those components in the assembly. Now, the further we go down the line in that supply chain and we make that significant change, well, the more others will have to respond to that. So supply chains are complicated, and supply chains are no longer single or dual parties. The same car with 40,000 components has up to 1,500 suppliers of those components. And that needs to be managed, and it needs to be managed very actively.
Yeah. Yeah. If any of them are delayed in getting parts to you, maybe there's a coronavirus outbreak and they can't get their workers to their factories and they have to halt production. And it's, it throws everything out.
Exactly. And if you do that in a smart way, and this is what I really enjoy about the digital supply chain, because the coronavirus is an example. We have a crisis that might impact our supply chain. Now, if we have a properly built and properly designed digital edition of our actual supply chain, that's the moment where we are capable to say, okay, what happens if we, for example, slow down this line of supply, and what does that mean for the other parts? Can we make changes in the capacity, or can we increase some volume from another supplier and decrease some volume with this supplier and navigate around that crisis? And that crisis never establishes the way we thought, so we can then the next day update it again. Mm-hmm. And we can really start looking forward instead of what most people in the supply chain business always tell me: we are managing the past. With a digital supply chain, we are capable of learning how to manage the future.
It's an amazing change, isn't it, in going from older, more analog technologies, where, as you rightly say, people were analyzing the past, to the digital, where we're analyzing the future. I don't know how to phrase it exactly, but it's a huge, huge change in the way people are now able to do business.
It's an amazing change, and there's a simple in English. We have a wonderful in German. It's almost as wonderful in English. We can say it makes the difference between reacting and acting. In the classical analog supply chain management, you are reacting. You're always reacting to things that have already happened. In a digital supply chain, you can act based on the things that you know that will happen, because that's the information you receive. And that's how you can build your scenarios.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. Jedi, looking forward the next 5-10 years, where do you see the biggest, we'll say, potential for change? And where do you see the biggest changes that are going to happen? How will they impact?
Well, the biggest changes that I will see, there's one thing that we are not yet aware of. Up to 80% of the production facilities we currently have are built in the previous century. Classical, built for big batches, built to produce a lot of the same.
Right.
And companies are starting to learn that you can still use those Industry 4.0 and the IoT and the smart supply chain solutions. You just have to be a bit more creative about how to implement them for those classical old things. So one of the things that I am already seeing, and it's developing, fortunately, that companies are moving forward with their infrastructure, which is, in some cases, they still plan to use it for the next 20 years. So people stop believing that all those technologies are only available when they build something new, a greenfield facility, or they purchase a new machinery. Uh-huh. We see that rolling out into the existing infrastructure, and that, I believe, is a wonderful change.
Yeah. We had an example. I mean, we have, you know, a bunch of examples with different customers, but there was one that really kind of blew my mind, and it was with Harley Davidson. It used to take them 21 days to create a custom motorbike. And when they shifted over to digital manufacturing, they brought the time of manufacture from 21 days down to 6 hours. Just incredible.
That's incredible. But that's possible.
Yeah.
It's
going back to what you were mentioning, going from facilities which are built to just build lots of one type of thing. And then when you try and do custom, in this case, motorbikes, it takes a lot more work and takes 21 days. When you switch to a facility which is built to be completely customizable and your lines can be completely fluid, then you can do mass customization and kind of lot sizes of one, and you can drop the time to manufacture, again, in this case of bikes, down to 6 hours for a custom Harley. It's really impressive.
That is really impressive, but it also demonstrates what is possible if you move away from the classical patterns.
Yeah.
In some cases, that will mean that you actually need to invest in your existing machinery. In some cases, it will mean that you must reduce some capacity for the mass production, which you don't need anyway anymore. And in some cases, it means that you actually discover that your equipment is capable of doing much more than you thought it could. You just have to sit down and with concepts like design thinking, but most of it is logical thinking. You need to be able to investigate, to explore, to do some testing, and discover how flexible you can become. Because that's also what Industry 4.0 is about, and that is what a smart supply chain is about. It's not just about more data and more technology. It's especially about becoming more flexible so you can respond to what happens on the market.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And in the case of Harley, it wasn't that they did it in the same facility. So they kind of, I won't say they cheated, but they took a kind of a hybrid approach. They built a second facility beside their existing facility, and then they transferred all of their staff and all their machinery into the new facility. But it was 2/3 the size of their existing facility, and yet because it was completely digitized, they were able to then, as I say, bring the lot times down from days to hours.
Yeah, but this will happen in many cases. And sometimes you have the luxury to say, okay, I got a second production facility and I can basically redesign my existing process with a single piece flow concept in mind instead of batches and long production. In other cases, you will have to do that. And we did it at one major automotive supplier, which unfortunately I cannot mention by name. We did the same thing. We did in the existing facility. We started with machine number one and eliminated all the batch containers and the batch flow and created a single piece flow structure around that, and then took it to the next level. And it was very fortunate that we have a very good tie-in of the ERP system from SAP at that moment. So we could get all the production data, we could get all the settings, the proper product identifications from the system, and we were capable of building a single piece flow throughout the production facility. It took 2 years because we had to do it step by step, and we could not go from the old school to the new school by just closing down the factory. But one of the results is that we decreased the capital on hand time, which was around 18 days. We decreased that to 2 days. So from purchasing the material to shipping it to the next facility was reduced by more than 80%. That is serious money.
That's a lot. Yeah, it's impressive. That's really impressive. Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, look, JD, we're coming towards the end of the podcast. And typically at this time of the podcast, I'll ask people, is there any question that I haven't asked you that you wish I had?
One question, Tom, and that's my favorite second topic, cybersecurity. So if you would ask me, JD, what would be your top priority in digital supply chain, beside all the technical opportunities we have and the organizational opportunities we have, I would say cybersecurity has to be the top priority, because the more digitized we get, the more risk we have that something bad happens to the digitized world. So cybersecurity, big picture approach, make sure that it is by design and not by coincidence.
Very good. Very good. Very good. Yeah, no, hugely important as we are opening up our manufacturing facilities and our logistics and everything. As we're opening them up to the internet, we are massively increasing the threat landscape. So yeah, absolutely. Very, very important to consider cybersecurity from, as you say, from the design phase right through. Not, it can't be something that you kind of cobble on afterwards. Yep, dead right.
Exactly.
Dead right. So, JD, if people want to know more about yourself, what's the best place they can go to find information about JD?
Well, they can visit me always on my LinkedIn profile or on my website under Johannes Drooghaag. My website is johannesdrooghaag.com. Unfortunately, jd.com was already taken, so I cannot use that. I am on Twitter. I am on Facebook, Instagram. Twitter is my main social media exposure. They can find me there under Johannes Drooghaag as well. And otherwise, drop me a note at my website and I will reply as soon as possible.
Superb. Superb. JD, I will put those links in the description of the podcast when I publish it, so everyone can have access to them. Thanks a million for taking time and joining me in the show today.
Well, thank you for having me, Tom. It was a great discussion.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain, or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application to get new episodes right away as soon as they're published. And also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.